You're listening to the Extra to Love podcast, brought to you by Extra to Love, a nonprofit serving families of people with trisomy 13 and 18, with your host, Amber Scuderi. Welcome back to the Extra to Love podcast. I'm your host, Amber. With me today is my co-host, Jen. In today's segment, we like to call Extraordinary Angel Families, where we highlight the stories of families who have navigated a trisomy 13 or trisomy 18 diagnosis. We believe that every story has an impact no matter how long, and we'll be hearing an angel warrior's story by the name of Indiana. Hello, Catherine.
Hello.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
My name is Catherine. I live in upstate New York. My daughter had trisomy 18, and her name is Indiana. I am a nurse and a mom to three other children, Elliot, Emma, and Olivia.
What is something in Indiana's story that is the biggest takeaway that you want families to have from hearing her testimony?
I think the fact that as hard as it's been to lose her, there's nothing but pure joy. And I would go back and do it over and over again just to have the time with her. And I think I'm a better person for being her mom. I'm a better mom. I'm a better nurse. I'm a better wife. I think I'm a better, you know, daughter. And it's changed my life in so many ways. And I also feel like it's strengthened my faith. And I've learned to truly, you know, give it up to God and go where He leads.
In our little questionnaire, you had mentioned that you guys are a blended family.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit more about how you and your husband had met, because I know you on the side, but our listeners don't know your story very well. So give them a little takeaway about how you and your husband met.
So my husband and I met in 2015. We both were divorced and single. I have my other children from my previous marriage. We met on the playground at our church. We were there for a picnic, and his friends invited him and my friends invited me. We were friends for many years, actually, before we started dating. And one day I realized I was in love with my friend, and he supported me through some health issues that my oldest child has had. And we lived in the Ronald McDonald House when Jason and I first started dating, and he would come see me every weekend. And I thought to myself, you know, this guy is amazing. He's, you know, everything. He was my rock during that. We got engaged about 6 months later.
Didn't know that. And that is so sweet. Isn't it weird how God somehow places the most perfect people in your life at the most perfect time, and you don't realize the impact that they're going to have on your life until later?
Absolutely. And at that day, I had no idea that what would come down the road for us. And it was looking back on it now, I was so, I don't know, dumb and blind, and I didn't see it for so many years, but I'm glad I woke up one day and did.
I love that. I think that's like the cutest, like, meet cute couple story ever. It's like a little Hallmark movie. So Catherine, you mentioned that you're a nurse, and I don't know that you mentioned kind of what department you work in, but did you have any prior experience to trisomy 18 kids?
I did. I had quite a few cases, but at the time, I hate to say this now, was one of those nurses that sort of thought, why is this parent doing this? And looking back on it now, I regret it. I hope I was caring and loving as a nurse, but in my head, I didn't realize what, I don't know how to say this, what, you know, how short-sighted I was being, and I didn't understand.
It's one of those situations where, you know, you're taught to believe a certain way or you think a certain way. And then once you're in that moment, you realize and have that revelation of how the things you were thinking were completely not like that. So extend yourself so much grace for that. You know, like, you don't know the things you don't know.
So I never had experienced trisomy 13 or 18 before I worked in the NICU. In my first case, I came on shifts, and it was a a baby with trisomy 13. And I said, what is that? And they said, well, it's incompatible with life. And I was trained that way. So if there's one thing I could go back and do is probably, you know, retrain everybody that I ever worked with in a different way.
But now you have like this incredible opportunity to use your wisdom and your knowledge in the nursing world and be like, no, don't think that way because this was my experience. And so I think that's a really cool place to be able to bridge those things together through Indiana's life, you know? And I think it's, I don't think you should beat yourself up over it because there's so many times where we could live our life and be like, I regret this and I regret that. However, in that moment, sometimes we need these trials and stuff to happen for us to just pivot and be like, I learned from this experience and I want to teach people something different. And I think you're the perfect person for that, by the way.
And I think I've gone back and tried to speak with friends and former coworkers that I used to work with in the NICU. And they've seen my story on Facebook and Instagram. And hopefully they know now also what I know is that incompatible with life is not even a term that should be used.
Right. So to me specifically, when I talk to families and meet families, and from my own experience, there's literally no greater life-changing moment than the moment that we're giving this diagnosis, right? Because you're a nurse. And so there's a different perspective there. And I want to know what you guys were thinking the day you guys got Indiana's diagnosis. What was your husband thinking? Because, you know, often we're always like, hey, mom this, mom that, but we forget about dads, you know, that dads grieve too. And dads are walking this journey alongside with us very differently, but still there. So how did you guys find out about her diagnosis? And what was that day like?
So I had gotten the NIPT blood screen done. And it was the first time I had ever gotten it done. I didn't get done with my other children. We did it because of my age. I was 42 when I found out I was pregnant with Indiana. So we had the blood work done. It had been about 10 days and they told me it would be 7 to 10 days for the results. So I called the doctor's office and they said, you know, we'll give you a call back and let you know. So I waited a couple hours and my phone rang. I was at work and I was in a patient's room, but I really wanted to get the phone. So I, you know, I excused myself and left. And they said to me that my blood work had come back and there was a 1 in 17 chance of trisomy 13, 18, or I can't remember what the other one was now. I'd have to go back and look. But abortion was mentioned in that very same conversation. So I was at work and I, for some reason, didn't leave work and I finished out my day. I didn't call my husband. My twin sister worked with me at the time. So I went to her office and I told her. I cried a lot because I knew what it meant. And the conversation had very quickly turned into scheduling an abortion, which I knew it wasn't something that I even wanted from the get-go. So I get home and talk to my husband who had no experience with, you know, trisomy 13, 18 or anything. He didn't know what it was. So I had to kind of explain that all to him. Being that I worked in the NICU and I knew how the doctors and the nurses treated babies with trisomy 13, 18, I called the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia the next day to make an appointment to try to get fair care. So that day I was referred for an amniocentesis. I live in Binghamton, New York. I had to travel to Syracuse for the amnio. I had to wait 5 weeks for my appointment. So at that point, I was only 12 weeks. I had to wait till I was 17 weeks. I thought that seemed like a really long time, but the doctors at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia called me back the next day, said that was okay. They needed to wait for the placenta and the amniotic sac to be fully fused. So go ahead and wait. And when I got the results to let them know, traveled to Syracuse at 17 weeks and got my amniocentesis done. They encouraged abortion, you know, in that appointment with the amnio. And if the results come back, we'll schedule you right away, which I knew I was not going to do. So had the amnio done. And a week later, we got the results. Again, I was at work and she said, I'm really sorry to tell you, your baby's has trisomy 18. I'm going to transfer you to the other department for you to schedule your abortion. And I said, absolutely not. That's not something I want to do. So she said she would call me back with appointments to see the maternal fetal medicine specialist and set up an ultrasound for further care. Went home that night and told my husband that, yes, we found out that day Indiana was a girl. We didn't know until the amnio came back. For some reason, that didn't result on the other blood work. So went home and told my husband we were having a daughter, and this is his first baby. And, you know, he's excited and happy and sad. And we felt all the emotions that day. We were hopeful, terrified, angry, everything.
You had mentioned that you had other children. So how did they take the news of their baby sister's diagnosis?
I don't think they truly understood, even though they were teenagers. I said, you know, there is something wrong with your sister. But to them, I think they thought the surgery would fix it, or something would fix it, in an operation, medicine. They truly didn't understand the complexity of it until she was born. They were sad, but they really didn't talk much about it. It was hard for them to talk about. I think they saw how sad I was, and it made them scared. I think they were scared for me and didn't even know how to react.
You mentioned a lot about kind of the push for abortion and termination and not continuing on with the pregnancy. Do you feel like there were some medical professionals that you felt supported by, or that really encouraged you to see things through, or even after you had Indiana, that helped really stand by you in supporting her and caring for her?
So my doctor at home in Binghamton, she was very supportive. In New York State, NICUs and maternal fetal medicine is regionalized. So you have to go to a regional center to get the care that you need. So our regional center was about an hour from home in Syracuse. So my supportive doctor here could no longer care for me based on New York State regulation. So I had to get sent to this other doctor in Syracuse. And he was terrible. He was awful. He said some terrible things to me. And I couldn't see him. He found out that I was consulting with the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and he told me that he would no longer monitor Indiana. He would only monitor me for preeclampsia, and they were in charge of Indiana. Philadelphia is 3 hours from home, so that was kind of putting a wrench into our plans. So my doctor from home stepped in and went to bat and said, hey, I will monitor you and work with your doctors in Philadelphia to make it so you're not traveling to Philadelphia as frequently. Because it would have been a trip to Philadelphia once a week, starting at 17 weeks. So she really supported me and helped me through till when we relocated to Philadelphia. She was amazing. And she stood up to this other doctor who really could have possibly even done things to her career. So she really was just in my corner and made my life so much easier by caring for me and caring for Indiana. The doctors in Philadelphia were amazing. The maternal fetal medicine specialists never once doubted my decision. I felt cared for and supported 100% every single appointment. Never were the words termination used. Never heard incompatible with life ever again.
There really is never any limitations that we're really are willing to go for our children. And it seems like a very big part of your story was having to travel great distances for fair care for Indiana in utero and out. As you guys were trying to navigate care for her in this way, in that season of life, was there any resources that were available to you guys to offset those costs? Or was it really a season of life where you guys really struggled to financially support these decisions for Indiana?
There wasn't. I'm sure there was, but I didn't know where to look for it. I didn't know, you know, even who to contact. So we were fortunate enough to be financially stable to where we could afford the travel and we could afford the hotel rooms. I had really good insurance. I could, you know, and it transferred over the state lines. So I was very, very, very lucky to be able to be in a position where we could afford the care that we received. The Ronald McDonald House also played a huge role in our ability to afford and pay for our care. I lived in the Ronald McDonald House for, 8 weeks, even before delivery. So if it wasn't for the Ronald McDonald House, I don't know what we would have done.
That's amazing. I didn't realize you could go to Ronald McDonald prior to delivery. So I think that's absolutely amazing. And I'm glad you were able to find that. Now that we've heard so much of your story, I'd really like to hear more about your sweet girl. Can you tell us a little more about her personality, the things that she loved, things she might not have liked? You know, just kind of let us get to know her a little bit.
So she was very, very curious. She always was looking around. She tracked voices. We have lots of video where you could just tell she was listening. She learned to smile. And that was just the greatest gift to see her smile and react. Even though she was intubated, we could still see that smile. She did not like to have a wet diaper. She absolutely hated that. She did not like to have her feet tied down. So if we ever kind of wrapped her feet up, she would always find a way to kick her little feet out. She loved to stretch and was always, you know, moving around and stretching and trying to wiggle out of her boundaries. It was always funny to walk into the NICU and kind of see what position she had landed herself in.
One of my favorite things, I guess, to hear about other families is how sometimes we're so often discouraged to have care for our children or to allow them to live. And so whenever we bring life to these children, it's sweet to see that they know, they're aware that however long their journey, it's completely worth every ounce of it. What were some of the things that were Indiana's complexities, so to speak, that would be discouraging, I guess, from a medical professional standpoint that she was born with? Like, what were Indiana's medical complexities?
So she was born with dislocated hips. She also had a horseshoe kidney, which never affected her. She had this, you know, the typical clenched fists, which I loved. I loved that feature. I just thought it was the most adorable little thing. She also had a large VSD and a severe coarctation of the aorta. Ultimately, they do believe that's what caused her sudden death, combined with an acute pulmonary hypertension event. So she was actually intubated pretty much her whole life. They felt as if her rib cage was too small for her to be able to take a full breath. So she had what was called pulmonary hypoplasia, but she would have lived, a normal life for her and with a trach, which was a planned surgery that she was going to have a couple days. She passed away on a Friday and she's supposed to have that surgery on a Monday. And that was going to be one of the things that was going to, you know, lead us to be able to go home. So I guess that when it came down to it, her biggest medical issue was her heart defects.
Yeah, I think we're learning that more commonly we're seeing heart defects being the primary concerns and issues that are kind of limiting these children. So hopefully as time goes by, as more interventions are made, we'll see progress there. How do you feel about life after loss? Like, what does that mean to you? What does that look like to you? How is that with your marriage, with your children, and just with you overall?
I would say the first month was a blur. I went back to work 10 days after I lost Indiana. I felt like I had to go back to distract my brain. I, like we said earlier, am a nurse, and caring for other people has always given me so much comfort. So I went right back to work. People thought I was crazy. We had her funeral on a Sunday. We did her burial on a Monday, and I went to work Monday afternoon. But it was what I needed to do. I think over the first year, there was so many highs and lows. It was a big blur. It was very sharp, I guess, is the best way to describe it. Everything felt like pain. There was no shutting my brain off and thinking about the what ifs. Like, what if we had done this differently? I played scenarios over my head, decisions that we had made. What if I had done something differently? I also really turned to my faith, my Christian faith. I turned to prayer and I turned to the Bible. I gravitated towards other moms and lost families who held the same Christian beliefs as me. And that was really a support. Also meeting other families with kids with trisomy 18, whether living or also lost families, it really helped me to heal, to connect with people. I don't think I would have made it through the first year without social media. I mean, with COVID, there's no grief groups, there's no support groups in person. So Instagram and Facebook and all sorts of the different trisomy groups and loss groups really were my life jacket. Social media was just such a powerful tool during all of that.
Yeah, I can imagine. I know trying to work through like bereavement and grief, it's every time you think you're doing well, something changes or you see something and it just kind of makes you feel like you spiral. So it's that one step forward, two steps back type feeling for a long time. So I'm glad that your experience involved some way for you to reach out and some way for you to feel connected so that you could work through that process, because it's definitely a grueling one to get through. And I can only imagine doing it alone would make it that much harder. What are some of the things that you do now that you feel help honor the memory of your daughter?
I like to share her story. I like to reach out to parents who are newly diagnosed. It helps me to help them walk through their journey, to give them support, input. I think being a medical professional, I knew where to turn to get help. I can't imagine being that mom newly diagnosed and not knowing what I knew. I would have had such a different path with the things that were told to me. So I honor her by helping other families get care that they need. I also, for her first birthday, we did a t-shirt fundraiser and we created memory boxes for our local hospital. We took a lot of time also to pick out her headstone. Her cemetery is at the end of our street. I could stand in my driveway and see the cemetery. So we put a lot of thought into her, you know, her headstone, and we picked out the perfect one. And that was really comforting to be able to pick that out and pick the perfect memory of her just really close to our home. We also have like an Indiana shelf and it has pictures on it and different things that people have sent, little chickens. Indiana had a chicken bow and we loved that chicken bow. One of my favorite pictures, she's wearing the chicken bow. We actually have chickens in our backyard. So we had a lot of chicken clothing for Indiana. So we have little chickens to remember her by and just all the chicken things.
Too often the term that trisomy 18 was an accident. And I'm a firm believer that God makes no mistakes in the lives of our children. And despite the heartache and the hard moments of it, we are truly gifted a beautiful gift with the life of our children. Tell me a little bit about your spiritual walk before Indiana and kind of where you are now with the Lord.
I feel like my spiritual walk before Indiana was there and established. I have had some different events in my life where I really was, I'm trying to think of the right way to say this, where I really needed God. I needed His guidance. I needed the comfort. I needed the strength that only God could give me. So in those events in my life before Indiana, I learned how to pray and how to reach out to other Christians to kind of support me. And my marriage is, you know, based in Christ. So I feel very, very, very fortunate to have that foundation in my marriage. Having Indiana and her loss really has made my husband and I work together as a team and truly put God at the center of our marriage. I feel like it strengthened our marriage and it also strengthened our relationship with God, because really there was nowhere to turn in some of the darkest times besides to God to get us through it. I really feel that God gave me these challenges in my life before Indiana to really prepare me for what was given to me in her life. I feel lucky that I got to be her mom. I feel that, you know, God gave me her and her life so that I could really figure out next steps in my life and how, you know, I could help other people moving forward. So I feel lucky and I feel like it was just a gift from God. But it's taken me some time to get to this spot where I feel so lucky, because sometimes when you think about loss, you don't, you obviously don't think of that it's a positive thing, but it really has changed my life for the better.
Right. There's so many like highs and lows in the stories of our children, and where it looks so sad and hard and seems almost impossible at one point, you reach certain points where you're like, I can do this. God is sustaining me. I've got this. And so it's definitely a yo-yo effect, whether you're grieving the loss of a child or you're grieving your expectations for your child. It's like a forever surrender journey with your kids. I do truly appreciate you joining us today and sharing Indiana's story for our listeners. I have a very big love and admiration for you because I did meet you at the very beginning of our personal journey, and we have that that chicken connection. And so I think that you meeting you in the beginning of my journey where we were both grieving two very different pathways, and just you just, you know, talking with me through the nights. And I think you do a beautiful job honoring her and telling her story. And I admire you very much. And it's night and day difference from our long conversations in the beginning of where we were grieving to now of the things that you're celebrating. And so I wanted you to come on here and let people know that it is a very long process. You know, there's never going to be a moment where you're not grieving, but at the same time, there's so much beauty that will eventually come from the ashes. So I appreciate you for coming to share a little bit about Indiana. Before we get off, I want to play a game of two truths and a lie with you, just to give something quirky and funny for our listeners to listen in on and weigh in on that we can play on social media. If you want people to just kind of keep up with you and where what you're doing with Indiana's story, please plug your social media on where to find you and whatever roles you're taking on in that.
So do you want me to do the two truths and a lie first?
So give us two truths and a lie about you, Miss Catherine, or Indiana.
Let's see. So I am an identical twin. I live in the same town I grew up in. I love snakes.
Please tell me this is a true one.
I'm totally going to gag.
That was too obvious.
We both had the same thoughts. Snakes. Oh my gosh.
I am the worst two
the first two I was like
player ever.
Oh my goodness. I was like, please don't be a snake. Okay. Oh my gosh, no offense to snake lovers out there. I am not a snake person. They terrify the crud out of me.
Neither am I.
So
I love gross, disgusting things. I'm a nurse, but snakes are not one of them.
I'm glad we had the same thought. All three of us were just like, nope, snakes.
Yeah. Snakes are literally my worst fear.
Love it. All right. So where can people find you on social media and follow you and just keep a, you know, if they want to reach out to you for some of your wisdom on loss and to be a place where you highlight Indiana all the time, where
so
can they find
Instagram
you?
My Instagram is at KLKERR11. On Facebook, it's just my name, Catherine Kerr, and it's KATHRYN. So a little bit different spelling. So those are my two social media accounts where I frequently talk about Indiana. I share more about Indiana, I would say, on Instagram than Facebook.
Well, I appreciate you again for coming on here and being bold and continuing to share Indiana in the way that you have. If you're a family in need of financial assistance or support while navigating the diagnosis of trisomy 18 or 13, please find us at extratolove.org or on social media under the same name. If you want to sponsor an episode, please reach out to info@extratolove.org.
Stay extra.